There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
You're listening to the Bite Size Business Breakfast, all the good stuff Tom and I did this morning on Monday, March the 16th.
Right, having a look at what's happening this morning. It seems like there's an announcement every 5 minutes from somewhere in the world. Here's what's happened in the last few minutes. We have got out of New York all of the restaurants, entertainment venues closing as of tomorrow, Tuesday, is what's going to happen. There's going to be an executive order signed today in New York. The mayor, Bill de Blasio, has made a very large statement on Twitter saying it's not a decision that he makes lightly. These places are part of the heart and soul of our city. I mean, this is New York we're talking about here, and this is effectively New York nightlife, because nightclubs, movie theatres, theatre houses, concert venues, all of them will close. He says they're part of what it means to be a New Yorker, but he says the city is facing an unprecedented threat, and this is what they need to do.
Indeed. New York also announcing the closure of schools. Over 1.1 million children will have to stay at home in New York. The Strip in Las Vegas. That's right, the Strip in Las Vegas. You know things are getting serious when the Strip in Las Vegas is being shut down. That has also been closed until further notice. And Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti in the last hour ordering a shutdown of bars, restaurants and nightclubs in the city of Los Angeles just hours after that New York order as well.
Having a look at what's happening with airlines in the UK, today we're expected to see UK airline bosses calling for some kind of emergency bailout from the government. Last night, TUI, the massive holiday group, said that it was temporarily suspending, and I quote, the vast majority of all travel operations until further notice. Cruisers in that, of course, the big three cruise ship companies have already suspended operations, package holidays, hotels and the lot to try and mitigate the spread of the virus. Later today, the chairman of Virgin Atlantic, the majority shareholder there of the Virgin Group, Peter Norris, is expected to write to Boris Johnson, PM in the UK, to say that the sector needs financial aid. He's expected to ask for between $5 billion and $7.5 billion. That letter is going to be signed by a number of Virgin Atlantic executives, including the CEO. They're going to ask for credit facilities and the rest of it to prop up that industry.
Yes, Emirates and Dubai airports both dismissing false rumours about flight suspensions, which were doing the rounds on social yesterday. Emirates and DXB both coming out and saying that they were unfounded, those rumours suggesting that things were being monitored and evolving with time. But also news coming through with regards to international airlines, just sticking with the airlines if we can momentarily, because New Zealand's flag carrier, Air New Zealand, will shrink to a skeleton operation because of the global travel limitations at the moment. The airline saying today or earlier today it will cut its long-haul capacity by 85% and its domestic flight capacity by about 30%. Also saying that, unfortunately, there will be wide-ranging redundancies as well for the New Zealand flag carrier. So at least they're being transparent.
And it's all you can be at the moment. Meanwhile, if we look at what's happened in the US overnight, we have an emergency rate cut, the second in 2 weeks. It will obviously have an effect on us here in the UAE. We're going to hear more about what it means for us in a moment. But first, let's hear from the man who's done it, the Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell, talking here at his press conference when he announced the rate cut about what the Fed is doing to protect the economy.
Well, the primary response to this challenge will come from our healthcare providers and policy experts. Economic policymakers must do what we can to ease hardship caused by the disruptions to the economy and to support a swift return to normal once they have passed. The Federal Reserve's role is guided by our mandate from Congress to promote maximum employment and stable prices for the American people, along with our responsibilities to promote the stability of the financial system. Today, we reduced the target range for our policy interest rate by 1 percentage point, bringing it close to zero, and said that we expect to maintain the rate at this level until we're confident that the economy has weathered recent events and is on track to achieve our maximum employment and price stability goals.
And we have asked Khadija Haque, head of MENA Research at Emirates NBD, to put that rate cut in context for us.
effectively, this is now the lowest U.S. interest rate since the global financial crisis. It was a little bit surprising because the Fed was scheduled to meet on Tuesday, Wednesday this week already. So bringing it forward really underlines the urgency that they felt in terms of announcing these measures. So not only did they cut the benchmark federal funds rate by a full percentage point, they also announced a large-scale quantitative easing of around $700 billion. The Federal Reserve also cut the rate on the emergency discount window for banks to be able to borrow up to 3 months at a lower rate. And they scrapped the reserve requirements on banks again, which should free up capital for them to be able to lend out to the economy. In a bid to ensure global financial stability, the Federal Reserve and other central banks released a joint statement saying that they would be making sure that there is sufficient dollar funding. The Federal Reserve is going to reduce the cost of those swaps with other central banks to make sure that everyone who wants and needs access to dollars is able to find them. Now, clearly, this is important because it is another step that central banks have made to try and ensure that the impact of the virus is mitigated as much as possible through monetary policy easing. But this is not going to be sufficient in itself. And again, Mr. Powell made it very clear that fiscal policy needs to be much more aggressive in terms of tackling helping the affected sectors in the economy and also workers who are affected by factory closures and other disruptions.
We asked Khadija the obvious question, what does it mean for us?
Well, because our exchange rate is pegged to the dollar, this interest rate will be fully passed through to UAE borrowers as well. It comes after the UAE Central Bank announced additional liquidity provision over the weekend. So again, it should go some way towards ensuring that there is no panic or stress in the financial system. In the UAE, there is sufficient liquidity available, and companies should be able to access funding to help them through this particularly challenging period.
Same question to Eric Swartz, the Senior Exec Officer of Rasmala Investment Bank.
Well, it ought to ease pressure on the currencies of the GCC. Of course, the GCC is not only dealing with the coronavirus and the impact on tourism and other travel restrictions at this point in time, but we also have oil prices, which have dropped quite substantially over the most recent couple, 3 weeks. And the drop in oil prices themselves are adding further pressure to economic activity here in the GCC. So we've seen increased focused concern, particularly with respect to the countries whom have weaker fiscal positions and the impact that the lower oil prices will have on their own economic activity. So lower interest rates overall for the GCC is quite positive or supportive.
It's Eric Swartz from Rasmala Investment Bank.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Let's have a look at one of the top stories of the day. The overnight interest rate cut. Ian Albert is Regional Director for Colliers International, big property advisory people. Ian, it's lovely to speak to you. Thanks for joining us.
Morning, guys.
Let's have a look at this rate cut that we've seen come out of the US overnight, slashing rates, second emergency rate cut in 2 weeks, slashing them to nearly zero. What could it mean for us here in the UAE, particularly in regards to the property market?
Well, as usual, you know, we're quite heavily linked to the Fed. So any rate cut there is pretty much inevitably going to have a rate cut here as well. The question really is, as you say, what does that mean in terms of the market? Well, lower finance costs means a boost to the market, hopefully, in terms of more people applying for finance, more people getting mortgages.
Well, this is kind of the second fillip, I suppose, for the property market. We've had the 100 billion dirham stimulus package with a special emphasis on loan-to-value ratios, a change for buyers.
Yeah, I mean, if we look across the board at what the UAE has done really in the last 24 hours, I have to say in some ways, it's sort of led some of the global surge. Obviously, overnight, we saw that coordinated rate cut from the Fed, and then the Eurozone was tying up with it, as was the UK, and I think the Swiss even jumped on board. And then, as you pointed out yourself earlier, Australians are on board. So when we look at the overall picture now, there is this squeeze on the rates which are coming out, what it means on a broader base in terms of how that fits into the other policies that the central bank has brought out. Is also supporting because, as you said, the central bank announced that they're going to drop the first-time buyer LTV rate from 75% to 80%.
So a reduction of 5% on the deposit that you'd require for your asset. And the thing is, it's important to note that that's not just 5% on the purchase price. That reduces all the way through the line, because in addition to your purchase price, you run around about 7 to 8% in additional costs, whether it's land registration fees or broker's fees, mortgage registration fees. There's a little whole coterie of numbers in there. And I think if that again is reducing not only the overall package of costs, it's also reducing the amount, therefore, that someone needs to put a deposit down.
Will it result in more people buying property?
The million-dollar question. Well, if we look at what's happening right now, or the half-a-million-dollar question, depending on where we are, I think if we look at what's happening now, it's interesting. Right now, if we look at our valuation teams, and I would imagine our competitors are pretty much the same. The banks, as of today, or as of yesterday, at 6 o'clock, are very busy issuing mortgages. Some of the banks that we've spoken to have said they've already reached, as of yesterday afternoon, their monthly quarter. So halfway, their monthly amount, rather. So halfway through the month, they've already reached the total amount they were supposed to disburse in mortgage payments during the month. Now, that's massively encouraging. You see a slightly mixed message coming out from the agents. Some agents are saying that they're having tough times, but I would say a majority of the agents are saying that they're doing very well. I think it depends also on what target sector that you're operating in. So that's very encouraging. The only cautious note on that is those sort of, by the time you get to a mortgage, you're generally about a month behind the market. So whilst we're busy now, is it busy because we had a great Feb, or is it busy because this is the current situation? I would suspect it's a great Feb carrying through into March. What we're going to be looking at heading into April might be a slightly different picture.
It's really interesting statistics that you're bringing there, Ian, to the table, because obviously, as you well know and we know well, we've talked about the real estate market here for quite some time and the struggles they're going through. Now, industry, the world over, the markets and the economy the world over are obviously facing the challenges brought by coronavirus. Is there the possibility that the property sector here could, dare we say it, benefit from this sort of indecisions at the moment?
I don't think indecision is necessarily going to benefit, but I do think that there is a broader base step that sits behind this. Obviously, from an individual, from the retail point of view at the ground level, there is a central bank move contained within their document. Aside from the LTV shift, there was also a sort of slight nudge in terms up to the banks in terms of get more money into the market, make more cash available. That's become cheaper overnight, so that should help to a certain degree. We know that the US is probably going to move into a QE phase at some point as well. So more cash into the market should mean cheaper finance costs, which should boost. In addition to that, the availability of finance from the central bank, I think, was at zero. And they're looking at two other chips. One, there seems to be a two-pronged approach. One is the overall banking sector and putting more money into the banks. And the other one is encouraging the banks to get the money back out there and remove pressure from companies and individuals, because it was interesting the way they sort of specifically mentioned the retail sector, SMEs and businesses, two separate lines. So if you look at the retail sector, presumably they're meaning the individual, they're saying to the banks, listen, you need to make more cash available. You need to be a little bit more flexible in terms of what you're doing and in terms of loan recovery. And they're looking at this over a 6-month period. So there's a much longer term plan. How that all impacts into the property market. If we take your standard property today, let's say around 2 million, you're paying around about, on a 25% deposit, you've got £500,000 during deposit, it goes down. You've then got about 7% cost, which is about another £140,000 that sits on top. If you can reduce all of that, then the cost for entry into the market is significantly reduced. And if you look at it from a 0.5% cut rate, the LTV shifts, and also you can start looking at some of those costs, which some banks will build into the mortgage as well, then your overall entry to the market could drop from, let's say, 640 for a two million dirham asset into, sub 500. So that's a significant shift in terms of the availability of cash that needs to go in.
Ian Albert, Regional Director of Colliers International. Great to speak to you. Thank you very much for your insights this morning.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast. Newsmakers.
The movers and shakers shaping your world.
One man who's picking up quite a job this morning. First day for Andrew Bailey. He's taking over as the Governor of the Bank of England from one Mark Carney. Interesting times to be picking up a new job.
Yeah, I mean, they always say you never start a job on a Monday, should you? Because things are just going to get worse. But, you know, starting jobs on a Monday where basically there is an air of uncertainty around everything that you are doing, and a lot of people are turning to you for guidance and clarity. Welcome to the job. It's not even lunchtime yet.
Yeah, I know, right? You'd be knackered by the tea break. Look, he has previous, does Andrew Bailey. Let me give you three reasons why he's probably going to cope being chucked into this. Number one, he was previously the boss of the Financial Conduct Authority, big watchdog in the UK. He took that job 1 week after the Brexit vote. So he's quite used to walking in the middle of a crisis. Speaking of which, he was also working for the Bank of England during the financial crisis. This is the second reason that he might be a safe pair of hands, widely credited for his role in saving the Royal Bank of Scotland, RBS, and Lloyds. He was chief cashier, very involved in the injection of emergency funds there. Number three, he knows what it's like to face a grizzly bear.
Which is the one that caught my attention, because that's not ordinarily the sort of thing. I mean, you come up against some difficult individuals at the Bank of England and you would have to deal with the odd politician every now and again. But grizzly bears, City of London, nah.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I think that the FT and the rest are giving him maybe a little bit more credit for this than deserved, because he was not even in the same country as said grizzly bear. He was in the UK trying to stop the collapse of Northern Rock at the time. His wife, who herself was the head of the government department at the London School of Economics, an economics professor Wow. there, was at their holiday home in Idaho when the bear wandered into the backyard. Mr. Bailey was giving her what is described as moral telephonic support. Moral telephonic support.
Okay.
On the line from the UK.
Just trying to remember.
Don't worry, love, I'm sure it'll leave.
Yeah, just speak nicely to it. Keep throwing food at it, it'll be fine. You're not meant to punch it, are you? That's sharks.
That's sharks.
You punch a shark, you...
I don't think you play dead with a bear.
Or do you?
Maybe you do. How escape a grizzly?
Do you stand still for a lion, isn't it? You play dead for a lion.
You do not confront a grizzly. Here you go. If you encounter a grizzly, do not run. Avoid direct eye contact. Walk away slowly if the bear is not approaching. But if it is approaching, stand your ground, because you will not be able to outrun it. Don't yell. Don't scream. If you've got pepper spray, good time for the pepper spray.
Climb a tree?
Doesn't say anything about trees.
I don't know, because I think bears can climb trees, can't they?
Pretty sure they can, actually. Yeah, that's it. Stand your ground. Stand your ground. The bear will respect you if you stand your ground.
My schoolboy manual. Just
But in a 500-metre sprint, the bear is going to win.
Just stand your ground. Let's just discuss this, if we may, you know, between bear and man. Let's
My
just talk
on the
about
bear.
This.
My money is on the bear. Right. However, I'm looking at a completely different website, although this one's called treehugger.com. Take of that what you will, which says... Play dead, lie on your stomach with your hands clasped behind your neck. I kind of feel like that's going to make it easier for the bear. Although, having said that, they then say, open your legs to make it harder for the bear to turn you over.
Well, I suppose, whatever you're into. But
I paraphrased that, by the way, because it wasn't the language that was used.
It was, there's all sorts. I mean, it's like those old things, isn't it? It's like getting punched in a boxing match, is that you can train. The first time you get punched in a boxing match, all that training goes out the window. And it's the same with all of this advice you can take from handbooks from all the world over. That if you are in that situation, I can pretty much guarantee you're not remembering what was it that
lie
Brandy
down, lie
told
on,
me
lie
to
on the
do?
Front, don't lie on my back.
Yeah,
yeah.
Just stay prostrate and then look up and not. Was it eye contact or not eye contact? Can you just hang on a minute? Is it eye contact or is it
googling?
Not eye contact?
Googling. I don't have reception in this park.
Can I get up the tree? Should I get up the tree or stay here? Do I punch it? Shall I punch the bear?
Don't punch the bear. Fortunately, your chances of being attacked by a bear, according to the National Park Service in the US, is around 1 in 2.1 million. Right. In fact, you are more likely to be killed by a bee than you are by a bear.
Wow. That's pretty good stat.
Useful to know. However, the new governor of the Bank of England, rest assured, does have some bear experience, even if it is remote bear experience. But these are remote times and people are working from home. So there you go. He is qualified.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Size Business Breakfast.
This week, in an effort to break away from the general business doom and gloom that is around the world at the moment, no surprise that Australian stimulus package is looking at focusing on businesses as well as households. The stimulus package that we've seen from the central bank that we've just been discussing with Alvarez and Marcel aimed very much at making sure that banks are kind and give relief and promote lending amongst small and medium businesses here in the UAE. We are, though, this week making an effort to focus on industries that are seeing increased demand from more people hanging out at home. A silver lining, but a silver lining that comes with its own challenges. We're also finding out how they're dealing with that increased demand. One industry is the meal box service. We are very pleased to be joined on the line now by Ahmed Al Akbar, CEO of Hello Chef. Hello Chef. Hello Ahmed. How are you going?
Hi. Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
For those who are not familiar with the meal box concept, do you want to just quickly explain to us how Hello Chef actually works?
Yeah, absolutely. Basically, we make it as easy as possible for anyone to cook their own delicious food at home. So we provide all of the fresh ingredients, the recipe cards delivered straight to someone's door. So if you were making, for example, something as simple as a chicken biryani, let's say, let's go Asian, we would provide all of the fresh raw chicken, vegetables, spices, herbs, rice, all delivered pre-portioned to the number of people you are eating them for or cooking for, and the recipe cards as well.
So I'm looking at today's menu, baked salmon, green pea, primavera pasta, looks very nice, and you don't need to go out the house or near a supermarket. You bring it all to us. What have you seen demand-wise since the outbreak of the coronavirus?
So we're up, and I would consider us one of the lucky ones. There is definitely a lot of shift in the market, and I would consider us very lucky.
When you say up, could you put a percentage figure on that?
So basically what we're seeing is the amount of people that are interested in food. I mean, it's very early, I would say. It's quite dynamic and it's changing almost day by day. Let's say 5 to 10% up over the last few weeks.
How do you cope with that dynamism? How do you cope with the change in demand?
So there's a few things there. There's first customer expectations have changed, and they've changed almost overnight. So I'm not as worried about the volume as I am of customers saying we want this done in a different way. And it's not that we have something to worry about there, but we definitely have to keep in mind that we're in a different time. That we have additional expectations, which I think are justified for customers to say, listen, I want this done in a particular way, or what is it that you are doing to protect me and my family? And I think those are very, very justified. So we're seeing, people asking, what is it that you're doing to, you know, given what's going on? What are the enhanced measures to make sure that hygiene and safety are in place? And we've got all of those, locked down and covered as far as Hello Chef's concerned.
When you say a different way, what are they asking for? Delivery men to be wearing masks? Does it go beyond that? Could you get specific?
Yeah, sure. So I don't think that masks help. The jury is out in some regards, but I would say that masks are only for people that should only be worn for people that are sick. We've taken pretty enhanced hygiene and cleaning procedures. We've taken it basically, I break it down to two different areas. One is our standard operating procedures, right? So we've looked at those and we've broken them down and re-engineered those. So they are completely enhanced, more checklists, more staff, more people on cleaning, et cetera, and then there is the situational procedures that we've had to put in place. Those are definitely due to what's going on with the coronavirus. We are working, for example, this week, and we're hoping to launch it like very, very soon, on no contact delivery. Customers are socially distancing themselves, and I also believe it's rightly so, given what's going on, and they don't want to interact with, for the large part, people are trying to avoid contact with anyone that's unnecessary, and we're going to try to do whatever we can to fulfill that expectation.
Been trying to get some of the thoughts from supermarkets recently, and they are not concerned about the fact that they'll have to close doors, but they are concerned a little bit about supply chain at the moment. Just wanted to get your thoughts, Ahmed, on supply chain. Obviously, you are very dependent on a long list of suppliers in order to fill your boxes. Is that a concern?
I think supply chain is definitely a concern. I don't see up until now, I don't see any shock that's coming, or I haven't been notified by any suppliers. We have in the last, leading up to this point, and again, it's changing daily, we've been spending much more time with our suppliers, meeting the heads of each one of the main suppliers we're dealing with, just to make sure and just for us to be reassured that we can fulfill orders. I don't see anything, I have not been notified of anything that's imminent, but I do think that there may be some surprises along the way, for sure.
Ahmed, before we let you go, you mentioned bringing in more people, more cleaners, etc. And if demand continues to rise for your boxes, presumably you'll have more demand on your delivery as well. Are you actually creating jobs at the moment?
We are. Yeah, we're hiring. There's no doubt. And if I could just add one thing, I think in a crisis, it's really important not to scrap any plans because we were hiring anyway before this crisis happened. We were growing anyway. And I think it's important not to scrap any plan, like main plans, and stay true to the big, hairy, audacious goal, which we are staying true to. I think it's also it is about being tactical for sure, but it's also about just staying true to where are we going as far as our vision is concerned. And we're staying true to that.
Ahmed Al-Akbar, the CEO of Hello Chef. Great to speak to you this morning. Thank you so much for your time.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.